Welcome to the podcast On Things Above, a weekly discussion and devotion rooted in the Word of God and reaching toward heaven above. Thank you for joining the podcast On Things Above. We hope these episodes have been helpful and encouraging during this time. And for this episode, we have with us Brother Brent Powers. The Powers have been with us at Southside for about 2.5 years now. And unfortunately, I've been away at school for a lot of that, but I know that the family at Southside has enjoyed having y'all, and y'all have made a big impact there. So, Brent, tell us just about how things have been going for y'all during all of this.
Well, you know, with three boys at home, it's been loud. But, you know, that's normal. It's just a longer loud since everyone's at home all the time. One of the things that I've enjoyed as I'm getting to work from home some more is the extra time that I get with them. So while it's been some things to get accustomed to, overall, it's really been a pleasure getting to do this.
Right. It's a learning curve for all of us. So
yes.
Well, we're glad to hear that things are going well. And I know we're all ready to be back together soon. So today you've chosen what was probably my favorite character to hear about growing up, maybe for all the wrong reasons, but that's Samson. So tell us why you chose Samson. What stood out to you about him?
Well, so, one of the things that I've gotten to do a lot more here recently is teach my older two Bible class. So, you know, we have our worship at home, but we also have a Bible class at home. And we've been following along with their lesson books. And they were in the period of Judges. You know, they've just gotten into the period of the Kings. But, you know, I got to spend some time talking with them about the Judges. And, you know, as we were talking through about Samson, one of the things that really struck me was the fact that he is mentioned in Hebrews 11. Mm-hmm. You look at the life that he lived, and I'm not so sure that I would have said that he was a great man of faith. But we know that he was a great man of faith because the inspired writer of Hebrews told us that. And so digging into the story, that's really how you find out how he was a man of faith. You didn't see it throughout all his life, but you did see it, and there was one great act of faith. In chapter 13, you see the type of parents that he had. You know, his father was named Manoah, and his wife was barren. One day, Manoah's wife had an angel of the Lord appear to her. We learned that from this angel of the Lord that Samson is to be a Nazarite from birth. Okay, and you know, the Nazarite vow, you were to not touch anything unclean. No carcasses. You were to abstain from wine and things from the fruit of the vine, and you were to let your hair grow. And so all these things Samson's parents are told he's to do when he's born. And we see a parallel with Samson and with us, because Samson was chosen from the beginning, and he was separated apart, just like we as Christians are. And we're chosen. We're God's chosen race, and we're to be separate from everyone else. So there's a lot for us to learn from Samson. And so then in chapter 14 of Judges is when we really start to learn about Samson's great strength and really about his weaknesses as well. We see in verse 1, Samson was going down to Timnah and saw a woman that was pleasing to him. And it was a Philistine woman. And so he went back and told his parents, I really want this woman. I would really like to marry her. And we learn more about his parents in verse 3. You know, they're trying to talk him out of this because they know that they aren't to interwed with foreign women. You know, his father said and his mother said in verse 3, is there no woman among the daughters in your brethren or among all my people? You must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines. But Samson was stubborn. You know, his parents, they were trying to talk him out of this, But they didn't know that this was the Lord's doing. And I think one of the things that we can learn from that is that God uses imperfect people to carry out his will. And so, you know, while Samson and his parents are on his way to Timnah, they're walking through the vineyards. Remember, Samson took the Nazirite vow, not supposed to touch or eat anything from the fruit of the vine. But as they're going down the road, a young lion comes upon them. And this is when we see Samson's first feat of strength. We're told that he rips this lion apart like a young goat. Now, it would be impressive to me to see a man just rip a young goat apart. But the fact that Samson rips a young lion apart, I mean, that's impressive. That's something that you only see in the movies, right? You know, we see all these superhero movies, you know, with like the Incredible Hulk in them and the great feats of strength that he has. And, you know, that's kind of the way I think of Samson. He's got strength like the Incredible Hulk. And so after a time, he then comes back. And on the way back, they see this young lion's carcass. And in it is a swarm of bees with honey. And here we see Samson break another part of his vow. Because remember, the Nazirite vow, you are to not touch anything unclean or dead. And what does Samson do? He reaches in into this carcass and gets the honey from the swarm of bees. And then he gives it to his parents. And so they are then on their way to meet the woman who he wants to be his wife. And Samson has a feast there. And at this feast, he poses a riddle. And, you know, the riddle is stated as thus in verse 14 of Judges 14. Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. And so with this riddle, Samson put a wager on it with the 30 men that were there. And they had to tell him what that riddle meant at the end of 7 days. So a few days go by and, you know, they're totally stumped by this riddle, and understandably so. And so they press his wife to tell him. They actually threaten his wife that, you know, they'll burn down her father's house if he doesn't tell them. And so, you know, his wife-to-be is pestering him, you know, why won't you tell me? You know, how can you not tell me? And, you know, Samson says, I haven't even told my parents. Why would I tell you? And so finally, on the seventh day, after, you know, 3 or 4 days of being pestered to death over this, he tells his wife-to-be, who then go in turn, tells the men the answer. And so then they come back and tell Samson the answer to the riddle. And you know, they give that answer in verse 18. They said, what is sweeter than honey, and what is stronger than a lion? And so then we see in verse 19, after he's told this, that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. And then he went down to Ashkelon, to a town nearby, and killed 30 men. And in order to pay off his part of the wager, you know, he took these 30 men's sets of clothes and he gave it to the men that he posed the riddle to. And his anger is aroused, and he gets angry and he says, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home, and I don't want anything to do with anything here. And he leaves his wife there, and she's then given to his best man to marry. And so after a period of time, Samson cools down and he says, you know what? I really want to go back to this woman. I really want to go back to my wife. And so he does, only to find out that his wife has been given to another man. And so yet again, Samson is angry. And he then catches 300 foxes, which is an amazing feat, if you ask me. And, you know, this isn't just a feat of strength here. This is a feat of cunning as well. You know, catching a fox is no easy thing. And, he catches these 300 foxes, ties their tails together, which is another amazing thing, how he was able to tie two foxes together at a time 150 times. I imagine there had to be all kinds of claw marks and bite marks. regardless, he did it. And that's how angry he was. And he attached torches to these two foxes' tails, lit it, and set the foxes off through their fields. And so the Philistines were incredibly angry. Understandably so. Their fields had just been burned down. And they want to know who did this. And they say Samson. They find out that Samson did it. So in retaliation to what he did, they exact the punishment on his wife and her father. They burn them. And so Samson then attacks them. And we see in verse 8, it says he attacked them, hit them with great slaughter. So he killed all these men. And then he goes back to Judah. And 3,000 men of Judah come upon him. And they're trying to appease the Philistines because, you know, the Philistines have been lording over them and ruling over them. And so Samson agrees to be taken captive by them, and they bind him with ropes and hand him over to the Philistines. And then, you know, as if his previous feats of strength and cunning weren't amazing enough, we see in verse 15 that after the Philistines take him, he finds the bonds on his arms break loose. He finds the jawbone of a donkey and kills 1,000 men. And at the end of this battle, he's thirsty. And we start to see a little bit of Samson's faith. And in verse 18 of Judges 15, it says, "Then he became very thirsty, and he cried out to the Lord, 'You've given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant, and now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised?'" And so God split the hollow that is in place, and water came out, and he drank it, and his spirit returned, and he revived. So we see an inkling of Samson's faith, although I'm not sure that's the way I would have asked God for water.
Right.
Seems a little prideful in the way that he was asking God for water. But one of the things that we see, I think, with Samson is that God was working through him, even though he might not have realized it. You know, if you think about it, the Philistines were forced to live in fear, and that they were really unable to harass or oppress the Israelites, all because of Samson. You know, that a guy who can kill 1,000 men on his own with just the jawbone of a donkey, that's something to be scared of. And so, you know, he was able to keep the Israelites safe in that respect for 20 years that he judged the Israelites.
So we talked a lot about Samson's strength and maybe hinted at a little bit of his weakness. But it reminds me of Psalm 119 and verse 37, where it says, "Turn my eyes from looking at worthless things and give me life in your ways." The whole psalm is about the law of the Lord and the instruction of God and the delight that he has in that. But I think this verse sums up sort of the first part of Samson's story. His eyes continually lead him astray. They lead him to conflict with his own people. They lead him into a lot of conflict with the Philistines. But of course, God still triumphs even through his mistakes. But his eyes even causes him to forget his purpose. He was supposed to be the judge and the deliverer, the hero for his people. But instead, his eyes lead him toward other things. And I think there's a lesson in that for us, that our eyes often lead us to the external things of the world, and they can sometimes distract us from our purpose and our calling. And I think Paul picks up on that idea a little bit over in Ephesians. So, Bubba, let's talk about that passage for a moment in Ephesians 4.
Right. So that's one of the walks of Ephesians. Sometimes we hear it described that way, to walk worthy of your calling. And as Brent said, Samson was called early to be a Nazarite. Now, I used to think that was a person from the town of Nazareth, but really it comes from Numbers chapter 6, where the law of Moses laid down the guidelines for those who would take this special vow, where they would be dedicated, separated, consecrated, or devoted. And so we see in the scriptures John the Baptist as a Nazarite, and Samuel had taken the Nazarite vow. So Samson, when you put him next to those other two, he stands out as one who did not respect that calling. This was something where over and over, he, as Brent so ably said, violated this covenant. We know that the book of Judges was governed by a spirit. Since there was no king in Israel, we read that every man did what was right in his own eyes in Judges 17:6 and 21:25. And so it's no surprise when we get to chapter 14 where Samson sees this girl that he wants. And what's his criteria? She looks good to me. Never mind that she's not of our people and she's of the very enemy that God wants me to deliver our people from. She looks good. So that was why he wanted her. Later, we find out he goes into a harlot. As Brent said, his anger burned in chapter 14 when he killed those 30 people. So he has not been faithful to the calling with which the angel of the Lord called him, even while in the womb. So when Paul says to walk worthy of the calling with which you have been called, he said, you do this, Ephesians 4 and verse 2, with all humility, gentleness, patience, showing forbearance to one another in love. So we have a calling, brethren, and we need to make certain we're walking worthy of that calling, that we are being separated and consecrated to God, that we're doing what is right in God's eyes, not in our own. Otherwise, like Samson, we're walking away from the calling by which we have been called.
Another thing that I like about that passage is if you back up just a couple of verses to chapter 3 and verse 20, it says, now to him who's able to do exceedingly abundantly beyond all we ask or think, according to the power that is at work within us, to him be the glory. So our strength, our might, and success comes not from ourselves, but from God. And that's the same for Samson. His strength was not by himself or for himself. It was all from God and was to be used for the purpose that God had called him to. So let's go back to Judges 16, where Samson finally comes to see the strength of God in the end.
Yeah, so once we get back to chapter 16, we see Samson's weakness really become his downfall. You know, it starts out in chapter 16. He goes into a harlot there in Gaza. And, you know, the Gazites were told that Samson was there, so they were going to attack him. Well, we see another feat of strength here, and that he snuck out overnight by taking hold of the doors at the gate of the city and the two gate posts and carrying them out on his shoulders. So, you know, we're again, just another example of his strength, but we also see his weakness starting to chip away at him, and the Philistines, much like Satan, are going to keep chipping away at his weakness to try and get him. And so, then it happens that he comes to a woman named Delilah, whom he loves. And the Philistines, they decide to go to Delilah, and they offer her 1,100 pieces of silver each from each of the lords of the Philistines. If you think about it, think about how much Jesus was sold for by Judas. And this is a much larger number. You know, Jesus was sold for 30 pieces of silver. Delilah is being offered 1,100 pieces of silver from several of these lords of the Philistines, just to understand what his weakness is. And so Delilah then begs Samson over and over again. She's using her powers of persuasion to try and get him to tell her his source of strength. And, you know, at first he says, you know, if you tie me up with 7 fresh bowstrings, then that'll weaken me and people will be able to overcome me. And so she does that. And he breaks the bowstrings when she says the Philistines are upon you. And, you know, you can tell his strength has not gone away from him. She asks him again. And he says, if you tie me up with new ropes that have never been used, I can't overcome that. And so she goes out and tries that. And we've all heard the old adage, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Samson's fooled more than twice. So, you know, that kind of says a lot about where his mind is. And to me, it says a lot about how prideful he is in his strength. Because to Ural's point earlier, he was not acknowledging where the true source of his strength. You know, he you get the feeling that he thinks the strength is from himself. And so then Delilah, she finally says, she's continually pestering him. You have mocked me these 3 times and have not told me where your great strength lies. And so, you know, she's kind of making him feel ashamed and bad for not telling her the source of his strength, even though at least the way that I read it, if I'm in Samson's position, I'm thinking she's not really wanting to use this source of my strength for good purposes. She's probably wanting to use it to harm me. Well, after long enough, Samson finally gives in. And he tells her that the source of my strength comes from my hair. And so, you know, as we've already talked about, he's pretty much broken the other 3 portions of the Nazirite vow. Well, now he's finally breaking the last one. As he falls asleep on Delilah's lap, she calls in the Philistines. Someone shaves his hair off. And then she awakens him, telling him the Philistines are upon him. And I think his response is very interesting to me in verse 20, because again, you see his pride. Samson says, I will go out as before at other times and shake myself free. But then we see the reason that he's overcome. It says, but he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. So the Philistines then take him and bind him up. And I'm reminded when I look at this part of the story of King Manasseh over in 2 Chronicles 33. You know, he was an evil king. He was a wicked king. And God called in the Assyrians. God had the Assyrians come in and they took Manasseh captive and carried him out in hooks and bronze fetters. And while Manasseh was, while he was in captivity, he humbled himself. And he prayed to God. We see in 2 Chronicles 33, verses 12 and 13, it says, now when he was in affliction, he implored the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers and prayed to him. And he received his entreaty, heard his supplication, and brought him back to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. So, you know, here we see an example of a king who was a terrible man, a terrible king, but he was brought low. And at his lowest, he realized that he needed God. And he repented of what he had done, and God put him back in place. And so that's what we see happen with Samson here. Samson is taken captive by the Philistines and his eyes are gouged out and he's only brought out from his cell in order to entertain the Philistines. You know, they're the leaders of the Philistines. that are there jeering him and all the things that really bring him low. And so one of the things that the Philistines maybe forget is that Samson's source of strength is in his hair. And so his hair starts to grow back while he's in the jail cell. And the Philistines have a great gathering. There are 3,000 people gathered together in this temple. And while in their revelries, they call for Samson to be brought out. And he is brought out. And, you know, Samson is brought quite low now. But this is where we see Samson's great act of faith. In verse 28 of Judges 16, after Samson has been brought out, he's been asked, he asked to let him feel the pillars of the columns of this great, great temple where this gathering is occurring. And in verse 28, it says, Samson called to the Lord, saying, O Lord God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple, and he braced himself against them, one on his right and the other on his left. Then Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he pushed with all his might. And the temple fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So the dead that he killed at his death were more than he had killed at his life. And so we see Samson's great act of faith here. And it's also his final act of his life. And so I think we can see from the story of Samson that no matter what we do in our lives, no matter how badly we mess up, how far we fall from God, he wants us to come home. And as soon as we realize our need for him, he's there with open arms, ready to welcome us home.
One thing that I find interesting also, throughout the whole story, his eyes were what seemed to constantly lead him astray. But now when his eyes are gouged out, he's able to see God more clearly than ever before. And he asks God, he prays to God to remember him and to ask for strength once more. And it makes me think, first of all, that maybe our weaknesses are harder to identify than we think. Maybe they're rooted deeper than what we're comfortable with, right? I'd rather have a haircut than my eyes gouged out. But it reminds me of what Jesus said in Matthew 5. If your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it far from you. Identify what your weakness is and cut it off and get it away. But then it also makes me think of Paul's words in 2 Corinthians 12, that God's power is perfected in our weakness. Samson's final act of faith was not when he was strong or powerful or mighty. It came when he was weak and chained and blind. And so maybe our greatest moments of faith come when we close our eyes and look to God and pray like Samson, that God remember us and gives us strength once more. I think that's actually how Paul sort of describes it in Ephesians 6 as he talks about the strength we need for the everyday enemy that we face.
Yeah, and I've always argued the case that Samson has got to be the best comedian in all of the Bible, because there at the end of his life, I mean, he brought the house down. The point the Hebrew writer makes about Samson, at least we infer this, he doesn't mention anything specific in that last verse where he says, time will fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah. But he does in verse 34 say, from weakness were made strong. And that does remind us of Samson, because here he was at the weakest point of his life at the end. And you have to figure that there was nothing about Samson physically where people would say, oh, that's a strong man right there. Or else Delilah would not have kept asking, tell us, what is the source of your strength? If it was in his muscles or physique, that would have been obvious. So you have to imagine that he was not a physical specimen or impressive with his strength just by looking at him, but it was because of the Lord's presence with him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him. And here at the end, he does pray that God will strengthen him, and God answers his prayer. We, in our spiritual warfare, are going to have moments of weakness where we fail and we lose the battle and we may feel defeated. And so Paul says in Ephesians 6 and verse 10, finally, be strong in the Lord. Don't try to fight your own battles with your own strength. You will fail. Be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God. So God equips us to fight our battles and to be strong, but only when we're strong in him, that the Spirit of the Lord comes upon us and he goes with us, and the battle belongs to the Lord. So even in our weakness, when God is on our side, we become strong.
Well, it may not be the first parallel that comes to mind, but Samson is actually an interesting parallel to Jesus. There's an angel that pronounces their birth and promises deliverance. They're both filled with the Spirit of God and accomplish miraculous things. They both spoke in riddles or parables. They're both betrayed by someone they love, sold for pieces of silver, and left completely alone to be mocked and scorned. And they both conquer the enemy by their death and sacrifice. But what's more striking, I think, is how they're different. Samson was controlled by his impulses and compromised every part of the law to please his own will, while Jesus was controlled by faith and obedience and devoted all his will to keep the law perfectly. Samson, with his arms outstretched on the pillars, cried out to God for vengeance on his enemies for what they did. But Jesus, with his arms outstretched on the cross, cried out, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And while Samson's death may have conquered the Philistines and brought temporary deliverance for the nation of Israel, the sacrifice of Jesus conquered Satan and death itself and brought eternal salvation to the whole world. And in both their stories, we read about God's power perfected in times of weakness, and we can have faith that God will do the same through us. Brent, thanks again for joining us and for the great thoughts on the Word of God.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Next episode, we're excited to study with Brother Jason Moore about the faith of Elijah. We'll see you then.